Hello.
Hello.
Feel like I should have used a spookier voice or something.
Hello. Good
What?
evening. Ha.
Yeah, is that sort of Transylvania Dracula voice like scary?
No. It is intended to be comical because it is a imitation of a bad accent, but whatever.
Imitation bad accent, like that fake crab with a K.
Yes. A accent with a X.
What is that? What is that crab stuff made out of? Do you know? Is it like soy or something?
No, it's a different kind. It's a fish.
Oh, it's made out of
Yeah,
fish.
it's a fish, and you sort of like densely pack it, and then you can sort of color the exterior of it.
Well, that seems unnecessary. What
Well, yeah.
if you're making crab out of fish? Why not just use crab?
Because crab's expensive. The fish is cheaper. That's why imitation crab is cheaper than fish. I mean, cheaper than crab.
I feel like there's something that would be cheaper than fish, though.
You feel like there's a crab that's cheaper than fish and
I
also cheaper
do.
than crab?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting
I feel
theory.
like there's probably like a tofu crab.
Well, you're right. I'm sure nobody, people are just doing this for no reason at this point, just because they love it, and not because they would rather have crab. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of indifferent to imitation crab inside of like a California roll or whatever
Sure,
because,
yeah, it's a reasonable filler in some places.
yeah, I mean, because it's not, you're not really like tasting the amazing crab inside of a California roll. It's
No.
full of mayonnaise. But
Yeah.
the there are fancy places you can go to and, you know, get like real, like actual crab in your sushi. It's very good. Or even just like a widely known chain called Sugarfish, where they will have the blue crab pan roll as part of every single sort of set menu thing.
But the Sugarfish place is a thing that I know about because of, you and Ryan, people in Los Angeles. But apparently it's all over the influencer internet too. I was shown a picture on someone's Instagram on the phone of somebody I live with, and I was like, yeah, I know what that is. That's a place that that Ryan used to be slightly angry about getting lunch from when he was at the place that he used to work.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a vegetarian,
Yeah.
it is not an ideal place to order food from. But it is one of those situations where a brand is a promise, and their promise is that they have a tightly controlled production of the sushi that you're going to have, which is also why it is not widely available everywhere, and why they can run out of a fish. Because they don't actually have the fish there that they cut at the place that happens in downtown Los Angeles.
Oh, you don't think it's a false scarcity kind of thing where they're just trying to make themselves look better?
No, I don't think that's it at all. But you can run into an unfortunate situation where if you are someone who has their heart set on the Bay Scallop as being part of the Nozawa, then you're going to be a little upset when they don't have the Bay Scallop anymore. And they
Wow.
come back to your table and they tell you that it's a, you know, a salmon sashimi, and then you're just a little upset because you don't even like salmon.
You mean you don't even like salmon?
There is someone who I live with,
Oh my God,
who does,
really?
yeah, who he loves cooked salmon, hates raw salmon because it's too fatty in its uncooked form, to enjoy. Yeah,
Okay.
we have a disagreement on that one.
We'll have words outside of the podcast because this is not the Sushi Hour podcast or the Sugarfish Hour podcast. We talk about movies here.
Ostensibly, yes.
Yeah.
And
To my recollection, there wasn't any sushi in this movie.
no, there's plenty of knife skills on display, I guess.
That is true.
I wouldn't
There
say
are very
knives.
large chef's knives.
Yeah, I wouldn't say knife skills so much as there are knives that are used.
And they're
So
out.
yeah. Much better movie. So without giving away too much about my opinion of this, this is one of those situations where people talked about it for being better than what it ought to have been, I guess. But it is exactly what I thought it was. So yeah.
Well, okay. So what was your impression coming into it?
That this was going to be a slasher with a comedic twist of it being like a Freaky Friday. Yeah. And it turns out that is exactly what it is.
Right. Because despite the fact that the film is named Freaky, where was it? This was probably on Reddit Room Game Show, where they were talking about how it was probably originally called Freaky Friday the 13th, because that's the whole countdown to Friday the 13th.
It was called that in the production. I'm assuming there was a rights issue because, Friday, Freaky Friday is like a thing.
Yeah. It's a very famous movie.
Yeah. and much better than this. But both of the movies, I guess. But this one, they didn't have, I'm assuming they didn't have the rights. So you wind up with this odd thing of the title being Freaky, but an emphasis placed on days building up to the final day. And then we spend most of the movie in that final day. So you forget that the premise is even that it's Friday the 13th or Freaky Friday at that point, because it's just like just part of the setup to get you there. But you're in that Friday after the first 28 minutes of the movie, where you just blow right through the 11th and the 12th. It's more or less what I thought it was going to be. I would say there is a stronger queer sensibility than I thought that there was going to be going into it, because I guess I just didn't know who Christopher Landon was or Michael Kennedy until like last night when we were looking at his tweets and just wow, just what a Twitter presence Michael Kennedy has. But the situation, such as it is that we have a slasher thing, and there's a mystical element of body swapping that occurs, mm-hmm. and there is a mechanic for that, which is a little problematic, shall we say.
Go ahead. Where's the problematic nature?
Oh, you mean the mythical Aztec blade?
Sure, the human sacrifice blade when they do the weird, the cool VFX reveal that they're on top of the temple and stuff.
Yeah, because you see, this is a mythical Aztec blade that never existed and is obviously not really designed to look Aztec in any real sense of the term. It's just there because of human sacrifice. And then mm-hmm. there's an inscription on it in Spanish, which they have the Spanish teacher translate for them. Why it's on the blade in Spanish and why it has, let's say, precise instructions on the use of the blade is a little peculiar. So I felt like
Think it should be on a stone tablet or something?
No, I just thought that whenever we would talk about the mechanics of the knife, that it would make that it brought the movie to be a little less interesting than it was, because then you're sort of distracted by how strange it is that they chose to go that route. I mean, I guess, it could be worse. They could have peed in the same water fountain or something, but it was just sort of peculiar, to say like, this is something from this exotic land and that's why it is this way.
You would have gone with just like a full moon eclipse on Friday the 13th or something.
I don't know. I mean, it could have been a variety of things.
They already had the moon element there.
Yeah. Or it could have been like Chucky, where the murderer was studying the dark arts, and it's studying the blade, I guess. Whatever. Mm. But they don't go that route. Instead, they just have it sort of be this weird accident because the serial killer happens to go kill people at the beginning of the movie, where the father of one of the kids is an art collector, and there just happens to be this knife, and mm-hmm. he steals it seemingly just because he likes the look of it. It is not a premeditated thing where he's been looking for this body swapping knife. No. So the fact
But to be fair, like 99% of the knives purchased are because the person that bought them like thought they were cool looking. So,
oh yeah, 100%. Get yourself some nice Shun kitchen knives. They will not swap bodies. FYI,
well, I just mean like mm-hmm. pocket knives, buck knives, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have utility. You walk around the house, you can cut boxes and open and stuff.
Yeah, I believe there are special knives called utility knives, too. I don't know. I'm not a knife person, outside of kitchen knives, of course, and X-Acto knives. Those are good.
What do you use your X-Acto knives for?
Mainly opening packages.
You use an X-Acto knife for opening packages.
Well, What I like about an X-Acto knife, opposed to, let's say, a utility knife or box cutter, is that the X-Acto knife will just go through the tape without cutting through any of the cardboard. And you can be very specific with the path that that blade is going down. Mm. Whereas I feel like you have a little less control with a utility knife or box cutter. And you can also wind up going further into the cardboard material or even the contents of the package than you may want to, especially if it's not just talking about like your standard Amazon box covered in Prime Now tape, but the little electronics package or whatever that you get that has that cellophane all around it, and you want to get the cellophane off, and it's just like, well, I'd like to do that without like marring the box, because what if I have to return it? I don't want to return a damaged box because I'm just damaged myself in that way, where I would like the box
because
to
you're
be
bad
whole.
At using a knife.
Yeah. So I don't know. I consider X-Acto knives to be great because of their exacting nature. You know, it's perfect for the job. Says it on the tin, as they say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough.
What is your defense of your collection of weird knives that make you seem like an unbalanced person?
Knives are cool. you can push a button on them and they snap out, and you're like, look at me, I got a knife now.
Wait, isn't that illegal? Is switchblade?
No.
No, okay.
I think the ones that are illegal are the ones that shoot straight forward out of them, like stilettos, I think they're called.
Or the butterfly just knives.
Butterfly knives aren't illegal, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, okay.
I hope not.
Okay.
A kid gave me one time, long time ago, the first movie I ever worked on when I was coordinating extras, this small 8-year-old child that I was basically babysitting because I was watching all the extras at the end of the shoot said, thank you, it was nice working with you, and he gave me a butterfly knife that his dad found at work or something. It was very weird. I think I still have it around here somewhere.
That
he was probably trying to cover up a crime, to be honest.
I was gonna say that whole story is very suspicious.
It is, yeah. 8-year-old child is like ditching a knife by giving it to some random person that they met.
So obviously that 8-year-old child was Vince Vaughn.
Exactly. He was much shorter than Vince Vaughn.
a key element of this movie is Vince Vaughn's height and strength, which is, I guess, one of the better uses of Vince Vaughn in your movie.
You know, I have to say, a little bit like you said, that you know what you're getting into when you watch this movie. It's going to be a body swap with Vince Vaughn and this high school girl. But I would like to say that if I'm going to watch a movie that features Vince Vaughn, it's kind of nice that he's not playing Vince Vaughn in the movie.
Yes, I would agree with that. This is one of the better Vince Vaughn performances because he's very much not himself. You know, he does some stuff where it's just like sort of a middle-aged man's idea of what a little girl is like.
It's like a more it's like a you shaved the interesting sides off of Jack Black doing his stuff from Jumanji.
Yes. Interesting? Well, that's strong. But
I mean, Jack Black was making some choices in Jumanji, and here you're a little bit more suburban up the middle.
Yeah, this is a little more restrained than Jack Black in Jumanji. Vince Vaughn does a better job than I, you know, would have assumed that he would be capable of doing. He doesn't. It's not like he disappears into the role or anything, because the whole point is that he, you know, doesn't disappear. And he's basically just Vince Vaughn pretending to be a teenage girl for the entire movie. At no point was I like, wow, what an amazing, effective performance. But something that helps with that is that Catherine Newton doesn't have much going on in terms of the acting choices that she makes prior to the body swap in this movie.
Very shy, introverted.
Yeah, and it wasn't until I was watching Vince Vaughn for a while that I realized that her nail biting chewing thing when she's nervous is something that he was doing that she does at the end of the movie. But then I was like, did I even remember her doing that before the body swap happened? And I'm sure she must have. Yeah, but that was a situation where she was a blank slate prior to Vince Vaughn doing that part. And then at the end of the movie, you kind of felt like she was doing what Vince Vaughn was doing. I don't know if they shot this all chronologically or something, but it seemed interesting in that regard. Whereas I don't think Vince Vaughn was ever trying to imitate Catherine Newton. But Catherine Newton also, at the same time, wasn't behaving like Vince Vaughn behaves when he is himself, the killer person, whatever that person's name was.
The Butcher.
Yeah, the Butcher, the Blissfield Butcher, which is a real tongue twister. But they both seem to sort of like be making different choices. It's not like when you have some other body swap comedy moments where the characters are pretty much nailing the mannerisms and the affectations that the other actor has made. Or we have a situation where someone's supposed to be playing a younger or older version of the other actor. And
they're not trying to pull one over on the people around them by like trying to maintain the personality of the person they no longer are. In this movie, when Millie becomes, well, when Millie is in the butcher body, I'm going to have to figure out how to phrase this properly. It's a bit of an awakening for her personality. So she can open up a little bit more. Then she sort of takes that into the future when she gets her body back. So it's not completely breaking the continuity of the characters for them to, you know, change a little bit when they are moving between bodies.
Yeah, it just, at no point are you just getting your cues off of their behavior for how they are. But the acting performance by Catherine Newton I thought was good. I thought that she was one of the better actors in the film. All of the other teens were bad, and I hated them. So you don't think
they played their roles as well as they needed to for this type of movie?
You know, that's probably accurate.
I mean, you got to root for some of the football kids to get murdered.
Yeah, no, I don't even really think of them as characters. Her kids, Josh, the kids she's friends with, Josh Detmer and Nyla, they are not fantastic. The four kids who get killed at the beginning of the movie are the worst actors in the film.
I think that's more a problem of that scene, which is a type of scene that's in all horror movies and I hate. But yeah, I suppose fair point. Especially the kid that gets the wine bottle in the neck,
yeah,
or the mouth. First of all, that was grotesque, and I didn't want to see that. Luckily, somehow the movie managed to like tone down its horrific gore after that opening scene, which I appreciate, because as soon as I saw that opening scene where all four of the kids get it, I was like, oh my god, if the rest of the movie is like this, I really don't want to watch this. But thankfully, it was kind of not.
Well, the exception of Alan Ruck's death.
Yeah, but that one was like so friggin' over the top.
It was a cartoon. Okay. All of these deaths are pretty cartoonish. Like the wine bottle thing, that would physically not be possible. The tennis racket death, that, like, how? How does that? How
at least
that
one was quick and silly, but yeah, it was a little funny.
No, but I feel like that was a. The movie tries to walk this line of being this slasher with horrific moments of violence and also this comedy movie that is in the trappings of a slasher movie. And I don't feel like they always step on the right side of that line in terms of the choices that they make, especially in that opening scene where I didn't find it horrific. I found it boring, and I sort of questioned why it was there other than establishing there is a murderer who is on the loose and who gets a knife that is magically enchanted that he doesn't know about. But that's what the whole scene's for. But the gratuity of it, I guess, is to let you know that you're in a slasher movie. I feel like I should stipulate, I know that you also feel the same way, that horror in general is not either one of our preferred mediums in terms of like watching for our own personal enjoyment or even for this podcast. We've covered very few horror movies.
No, you're being too nice. Mm-hmm. After that opening scene, because, you know, I was excited to see a horror movie like this or whatever that has a little bit of fun and silliness and kind of breaks out of the mold a little bit. But after that opening scene where the four kids get brutally murdered, I just had the realization, and that's literally what I typed in the Slack, was like, oh, right, I don't like horror movies because they make me feel bad and I don't enjoy them. I know a lot of people do, but yeah, I don't like this, and I never have. And it's not the movie's fault. It's just that I don't like these kind of movies.
No, I feel like the people who made this movie are definitely a fan of slasher mm-hmm. films. I think,
and I think for the genre, it's a good movie.
Yeah, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to appreciate this film because I don't. What they're doing in terms of the deaths is not a parody of deaths. It just goes over the top. But some of the movies that, even when they take themselves seriously, are still going over the top too. So it doesn't necessarily make it comedy because they went over the top with the murders, because they went to cartoon territory. So,
which is why we thankfully have the exquisite comedy of Vince Vaughn being a high school girl.
Yeah.
No, but the same thing, like I was telling you a little bit in the Slack there, same thing with Ready or Not, which is probably a little bit more of an earnest movie because there's no Vince Vaughn body swap or whatever. But that was another one where there's some fun and there's some humor and it's very entertaining. But at the same time, I'm watching it like, yeah, this is not my kind of movie, but I could see how people who enjoy these kinds of movies would really enjoy this.
Yeah, I didn't hear too much favorably about Ready or Not when it came out. Even from
people, Adam Brody in it, man.
Yeah, even for people who appreciate that sort of thing. That people felt like the satire of it was weak.
People criticized it for trying to be some sort of metaphor for classism, and it's it's there, but that's not really the point of the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really foreseeing an event where I will watch it. But
you should watch it. Watch it for Halloween.
Okay. Sure.
Eventually, you know, when you have free, like, there's no reason to like run out and go watch it.
Does this mean that we're doing like a Halloween-themed set of movies?
You know, that thought occurred to me, but then as I was getting into the movie and realized that I wasn't enjoying horror movies, I also thought, oh no, I hope we don't do that.
Yeah, well, also, I looked at the calendar, and I think it's safe to say that that's not going to happen.
That our horror, that this episode might come out around Halloween, but maybe afterward?
Probably before. But the... you know, we missed our opportunity to have defocused Halloween D-ween. Could have gone with D-ween.
D-ween, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No.
Or defoctober.
Defoctober. Holofocused. These are all very bad. I feel like our pun game is off tonight.
Yeah. Well, I blame the movie. Anyway,
convenient now that it's not here to defend itself.
Yes, take that movie, take that successful
movie.
What
do you have to
say for yourself? Yeah, I mean, this movie was successful, I believe. And I didn't actually look what the box office was on it.
This was released in 2020, November 2020. So, budget $5 million, opening weekend $3 million. Gross worldwide 15, so technically it earned three times its budget, even though the budget was $5 million.
That's thrifty. Mm-hmm. I know people appreciate Blumhouse for, you know, him bringing horror back, but also Jason Blum specifically of Blumhouse. But I think Jason Blum's real talent is chasing subsidies that got this down to $6 million. I mean, it looks like I've seen more expensive movies that look cheaper than this, is what I would say.
That's a nice way to put it.
In a nice way.
Where does this movie feel like it was filmed? I mean, it was filmed in Canada, but like, what were they aiming for?
I thought it was filmed in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, it says filming locations Canada in the details, but I guess I can click on it.
Okay.
Canada, California, Minnesota, Georgia.
I think it was Georgia, maybe some footage from other places was added, but the movie I think is supposed to seem like it takes place somewhere in the northern Atlantic coast of the United States. It's not specific, but it you know, the town is called Blissfield, and it seems like a small weird town. So I think it, you're dealing with your, you know, New England's and your Pennsylvania's and your, I don't know, North Carolina's, South Carolina's. I don't know. There's no strong accents in this, so it's fine. It doesn't really give itself away to be any particular place. And its location is not important at all to the plot, other than they have a small police department of like three people. Two incompetent guys, and then the sister of our main character.
Always a recipe for a horror movie, small police department.
Yeah. How else would the killer get away with this? Because police are so competent in large numbers that you would easily be able to take care of this situation.
Yeah. There's efficiency in numbers, and then mm-hmm. they'll just canvass the whole city and shut it down.
Yeah. I'm sure that all three of them went on strike because of the budget cuts. They feel like they should really have an increased budget for their department, and they probably charge a lot of overtime on their salaries. So that's something to consider too.
Well, where was the scene where they you know, look across the jail cell bars at the killer and say, "Well, without you, what would we do with ourselves? Like, you know, we need you to have meaning in our lives." And then they release the killer out into the woods for the sequel.
Yeah, Batman style. It doesn't matter. I think it is probably worth mentioning the home life of our main character, such as it is. We have
the home life being what?
We have the mother, who is not dealing well with the loss of her husband, the father of the kids, from a year ago, and she has resorted to drinking Chardonnay that comes in a clear bottle, which is a very bad sign. Chardonnay should come in a greenish bottle, because you don't want the sunlight to damage it.
Was it actually Chardonnay?
It says Chardonnay on it. I don't remember the fake brand that they gave it, but it is a budget wine, is, I believe, is what they're trying to get across.
They could have circumvented that faux pas, just gone with the Sauvignon Blanc or something.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter in terms of this
twist
movie.
Twist cap and everything.
Yeah, it's just supposed to look cheap. But the clumsiness that with which they handle the alcoholism part of it, it doesn't resolve or go anywhere or really help with anything. And it is not something that our characters find a solution to or overcome. But it's there.
It's one of those handful of scenes that has to be in the movie. Like, you know, you have to have the bad home life. You have to show the alcoholic mom, you know, messing up for the daughter, which results in, you know, in this case, it results in her being attacked by Vince Vaughn. You have to have, you know, the scene where Vince Vaughn is chasing Billy's friends to say, you know, let's stop fighting, you know, look, it's really me. And then I'm going to do something to prove to you or whatever. You have to have that here because it's a body swap or whatever.
Yeah.
There are a handful of scenes that you just have to have in a movie like this. And, you know, they do them relatively well, but I guess they're not terribly surprising.
No, I feel like the stuff involving the mom was the weakest, except for when they go to Discount Bonanza and Vince Vaughn is in the changing room, and the mom comes over and they have their little conversation there. I enjoyed that. Had that been a bit they kept going back to, or had that been something about the mom's trying to like date or find somebody in her own life or something, then that could have potentially been interesting. But as it is, her story is unresolved.
Did you expect her to, like, at the end there when he broke into the house, for her to go like, "Your voice sounds very familiar to me. It's very soothing."
I wondered if they were going to do it for comedy reasons. You can't see my air quotes, but they didn't do anything along those lines. They didn't mention it at all. And obviously, of course, Vince Vaughn doesn't know that that had happened, so he couldn't use that psychologically to mess with the other characters.
Oh, right. Good point.
Yeah. Had there been, when they had a Vaughn in Millie's body tied up at the chair at Detmer's house, if they had talked about how weird that was at Discount Bonanza or whatever in front of her, then I feel like that could have been a reason why she could have used that psychologically at the end of the movie, and maybe that would have been more interesting. And you could have had a resolution with the mother then after that, but they don't ever really explore that. Also, the movie doesn't explore why the mother doesn't like keep Millie at home after the attempted stabbing. Instead of sending her to school by herself, she doesn't, you know, take off work. She goes to work like it's a normal work day. Millie goes about her life as if it was normal, because she's a killer, so she doesn't know not to do that. But no one else around her thinks to, you know, keep her in the house. It's very peculiar. And
well, I mean, she's a teenage high school girl. You're not going to, stop her from doing anything she doesn't want to do.
Yeah, and Char, short for Charlotte, apparently.
Charlotte? I thought they called her Charlie at one point, or is that all the same?
I thought they called her Charlotte, but it doesn't.
Oh, really... Charlene.
Sure. It doesn't really matter. Char, C H A R. She.
Charlene.
She doesn't. She's not dealing well with the death of the father because she thinks the mother should get a grip on everything and have everything more in control. But she doesn't. She doesn't ever get to become a realized complete character or have any sort of like integration with our main character's storyline other than being an obstacle, and having interest in the main character, but never resolving anything with the main character. So from a writing standpoint, I disapprove of how they handled it, especially at the end there where you have the final confrontation that occurs in the house. And then you just are left with questions like, did she talk about the specifics of the body swap? Because the sister was told about the body swap, but then she shot this person point blank, or she was going to shoot this person point blank. She doesn't believe a body swap is happening anymore, but they, like, all we know is
that... We were never clear if she believed in the body swap, even though Vince Vaughn, you know, said the, I thought your hamster could swim thing or whatever. It never really landed. They didn't fully redo that scene from earlier where Vince Vaughn talked to Millie's friend and, you know, did a cheerleading dance or whatever to convince them all.
Yeah, it's all really just open. And they end the movie by, you know, our, you know, hero, Millie, having killed the bad guy of the film. But that's it. They don't resolve anything personally between them. And then in terms of, like, our... buddies, the friends of our main character, they don't resolve anything either because they don't have any real struggles that they're dealing with. They're just buddies through the entire picture. And I kind of wish they had done something with that. There is, of course, the football guy that she sits next to in shop class, and they have like a very interesting relationship at this point. I really did not expect the movie to have the guy kiss Vince Vaughn because he is in love with her so much, Millie so much, even though that Millie is inside of Vince Vaughn, that he still loves her and wants to kiss her. In the movie, you can comment on that, like, oh, I don't want you to kiss me with the yellow teeth and all that, but they still go for it. That they then have sort of a loving bond afterwards. Like, it's good that they resolved that, that they have that all sorted. But I just didn't care for how they handled any other character really in the film.
Hmm.
And what happens with Josh Detmer's mother who came home from being a stewardess? She just disappears. She's there for one scene.
Presumably, Nyla explains to the best of her abilities what had occurred there, but yeah, who knows. You know, I guess the contrast between the silliness of the body swap Vince Vaughn and Millie characters kind of does need to play against the more straight up characters in the movie so that they have some sort of character contrast. But yeah, I guess the characters, you know, nothing crazy happens aside from, you know, did that just happen, basically, at the end there, their reaction?
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, 10 seconds where I thought the movie was going to be bold and have, you know, the stabbing part where they switch bodies back at the end.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was maybe going to be bold and reveal that the transfer hadn't taken place yet because, like, the first time, the transfer happened when they went to sleep at midnight. as opposed to under these conditions where the transfer happened instantaneously. So I thought that they were going to have a moment where perhaps they would shoot Millie still inside of Vince Vaughn's body, so the body swap couldn't happen, and then the killer would still be inside of Millie's body. But the movie was like, nope, we're going to give her a good ending. And I appreciate that, because it's not like, you know, Alien Covenant or anything, but it's still...
We've seen enough of those movies that will make that choice that now we're kind of sort of sometimes expecting it, that when they don't do it, it's almost a surprise.
Yeah, but at the same time, the characters react as if they know that that is the course of events. And I wish there had been some more hesitation in what they were trying to decide to do for how to handle the situation, as opposed to just shoot him up full of bullets.
It wouldn't even have mattered, because he didn't die. So he was just in the ambulance. So maybe they could have gone to sleep at midnight anyway. It wouldn't have made a difference. Although the... You know, not to like nitpick every tenuous thread in this movie, but the idea that EMTs in an ambulance can't tell the difference between somebody's heart stopping and somebody disconnecting their little cable there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think they showed a finger pulse oximeter dangling and not a heart monitor, but what do I know?
I mean, this is not a movie where we're going to deal with science. Do you remember the cryo-athletic chamber?
I do, yes.
Did you realize that there is a cryo-athletic chamber inside of a high school where people can go for their cryo treatments as members of the sports teams? And
those are very costly. They must really take their sports seriously. Maybe this takes place in Texas, where football is life.
Yeah, and also that there are no safety precautions, so that you can instantly freeze a person entirely through their body to the point where you can Terminator 2 them onto the ground.
To minus 300 Fahrenheit for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, she wasn't drowned in liquid nitrogen. There's no reason why this would happen.
They didn't even punch the control panel to like break it so it wouldn't stop automatically.
No. All she does is like crank it, and the number just keeps climbing. And it's like, this is software. Like, there's no like thing that she's doing that's like overriding the safety mechanism. It's just like, no, she just can literally set it to something that would freeze a human being solid, which is implausible.
Peloton sold a very expensive treadmill that killed people, so you know, things like that could happen.
Yeah, it's a little different, but it's okay, though. I only regretted slightly that the movie killed Ryler, who I thought was the most interesting teenager up to that point.
Did you really?
Yeah, I mean, she's basically Cordelia Chase from Buffy, but I love me some Cordelia Chase from Buffy, so...
Never watched Buffy.
Well, imagine Ryler as a recurring character. So...
That name, my goodness.
Awful. But...
She had to die just because she was named Ryler.
I like that the movie attempted to show some of the social interactions that kids might have, where she posts on her Instagram story about how deeply affected she is by somebody dying, even though she didn't really know them and doesn't really care about them. And then she tries to fake being close to Millie so that way she can, you know, talk about it and post about it and get in on it. Like she has no other real caring motivation or sensibilities other than like wanting to be in the mix of the most important news of what's going on,
center of attention. In the same way sort of that Alan Ruck really leaned into the stereotype of his character.
Do you think he grew out that handlebar mustache just for this role, or do you think...
Absolutely, I do. There's no reason he would have that facial hair aside from this film.
I mean, I love Alan Ruck. Famously, the captain of the Enterprise B in Star Trek Generations, the movie.
Yes, that's what he's most famous for.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, well, you know, maybe we'll watch it next Tuesday. But the Alan Ruck, I appreciate when he showed up here. I was like, oh man, Alan Ruck, you're really slumming it to be in this part. He's fantastic on Succession. I don't know if you're aware of the show or I've ever heard of it, but people love it.
I've heard of it. People enjoy it. There's memes and things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of discussion. It's one of those ones that you can tell is really popular because people tweet about it without tweeting what they're tweeting about, like an Apple event.
Mm-hmm. Just very oblique.
You just see tweets, like one sentence that doesn't make any sense unless you know they're talking about Succession.
Mm-hmm.
But Alan Ruck, yeah, he frequently plays, dorky or kind of lacking self-esteem. But here he's overly assertive shop teacher jerk.
Yeah.
And as a result, he gets cut in half on the table saw.
Yeah, he's clearly this misogynist bully who grew up to be a shop teacher. And he enjoys his job because he can pick on the weakest person in the class. And they communicate.
Which was not my experience with shop class. My shop teacher was wonderful. I mean, he didn't want to be there, but he was great.
What?
He definitely did not. He wanted to be retired and at home watching television or something.
Well, I think that's kind of the experience I had with a drafting teacher. Because I didn't take shop class. But yeah, I feel like that you get some of these electives where people are just like, whatever. They just, they do the thing, go through the motions. But with him, it wasn't about going through the motions. He really did care about whether or not the two people he had picked to be the leaders of the pack in the class were doing a good job and really cared about picking on whoever the worst student was in the class.
Mm-hmm. I also like how they managed the stereotype that the beloved student class president / captain of the football team is also really good at shop class and his design of his doghouse. Like, that was an interesting choice to make him like good at literally everything, and Millie, our introverted person, is bad at even the, I don't know if you would call this an art type class or something, but it's something you would expect maybe that an introverted person might have a hobby in. Maybe not woodshop per se and building dog houses, but one of the more elective courses at the school.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the movie makes clear what it is that she's actually hoping to get out of any of this stuff, but I don't really think that's the point. But she doesn't really seem. I mean, she may just be doing it because she wants to be close to what's his face. Mm-hmm. But because she's infatuated with him and he likes her, but they haven't. Neither one of them has really connected the dots on the situation until after the body swap happens.
Mm-hmm.
But
and then Vince Vaughn recites a poem that confuses everyone, but then we later get the explanation. I mean, I guess it helped that they didn't explain it first and then do the poem. Because again, that's another one of those scenes where Vince Vaughn has to do something to prove to the friends that he is in fact Millie. And it was tedious, but still it was less tedious than it would have been, if he would have started by saying, I'm Millie, there was a body swap stuff. I know, I can prove it to you. You got a poem and I'm going to recite it to you now.
Yeah. Only the real Millie would know. Anyway, it's always the
always
most
lies. One of us always tells the truth.
It's one of those.
And one of us looks like Vince Vaughn.
The most tedious part of any sort of like body swap or clone or like, pseudo fake out shape shifting thing is always that moment where it's just like, oh no, I'm the real one. That's the fake one. And like, you know me because I remember this one thing. And it's just like, oh, mm-hmm. God, it's just.
And plot mechanics that happen as a matter of misunderstanding because people are scared or unwilling or uninterested in learning the truth or whatever. That's something that's frustrating to watch as an audience member.
Yeah, I did like when Josh threw the tray of tater tots at Vince Vaughn.
Yes, is it really tater tots?
Yeah,
it's a waste too. I mean, tater tots are good.
Yeah, I mean,
although who cooks tater tots on a? I guess you could cook them on a sheet tray like that if you're at school or something. But
well, how do you cook your tater tots?
I guess that's what we do. Or no, we air fry them now. But I guess that would be what we would have done if we don't have an air fryer.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I would say 99.9% of all people who make tater tots get the frozen tater tots,
throw them in there.
Put them on a sheet tray and put them in the oven.
Sure.
I will say that the cook time on the package of tater tots is always incorrect. You need to cook it much, much longer than what it says mm-hmm. on that package.
Well, you need a crispy tater tot. You don't want those squishy, soggy tater tots.
No, I don't need the equivalent of an IHOP hash brown. I want like actual crispy tater tots.
IHOP hash brown. I don't know that I have an IHOP specifically hash brown as a reference in my palate currently.
Well, my mom likes the pumpkin pancakes at IHOP, and she would take us to IHOP because she liked the pumpkin pancakes, and I would like have something savory because I don't actually like sweet stuff that much, and also everything inside of IHOP is sticky and I find it disgusting.
Yeah.
But the hash browns were never fully cooked all the way through. You had that raw potato-y kind of thing going on.
Sure. Yeah.
And then like the light golden kiss of a couple of striations on the top of the hash brown stack.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you now. No, don't get me wrong. I've been to IHOP many a time, mostly under the influence in high school and college. I guess I don't really pay attention to their hash browns. Waffle House is a little better with the hash browns, but still, I think that you still end up with that real hard crust on the outside and some underdone center bits.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not even a hard crust, like I was saying with the IHOP, at least that IHOP in particular.
Yeah.
Sorry, IHOP brands of America, don't come after me. I don't know how you run your franchise or whatever, but the point is crispy tater tots are the way to go.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes.
Yeah.
Almost overdone, but not quite, because the inside's going to keep a little bit of fluff.
Yeah. Also, I don't even know how it's possible to cook a tater tot to overdone. You'd have to cook that in the oven for like an hour and a half.
I think you would have to come straight out of the freezer into maybe like a saucepan or something to burn the outside and leave the inside still underdone.
Yeah. What's one of the things I appreciate about a tater tot is you can just let it go for as long as it needs to go. I do not like, though, you do need to handle the timing a little bit in terms of coordinating it with whatever else you're making, because this is your
it has to come to the table steaming hot rule, right?
Well, not just steaming hot, but with hash browns specifically, if they start to cool down, they'll harden up in an unpleasant way where it's not crispy crunchy, it's just hard. And so
especially if you've got the hash brown like on a plate, like it turns into a patty, but not a pleasant patty.
No. Not even a peppermint patty. It is.
Remind me the other thing that you would always argue about that had to be done perfectly at the last minute and brought to the table, but also you would intentionally forget something that somebody else wanted because it was bad. I feel like this might have been like a Thanksgiving food.
I'm staring off to the distance. Was it mashed potatoes? Thanksgiving food? I'm trying to think.
There was something that you always argued had to come to the table hot, but in order to do the additional thing that the other person at the table wanted, it would have taken additional time. It would have ruined the hotness of the item you were bringing to the table.
No,
we should go back to the archives. I can't remember. We have too many food episodes.
We'll just re-listen to 337 episodes of this podcast, and then it'll be clear what it was that we were talking about at that point. Mm-hmm. But anyway. I coordinated the cooking really well tonight. I ate the sausages and another pan. I had the carrots, fennel, and shallots. And then in the microwave, I had the cauliflower mesh.
Look at you. What kind of sausage?
Yeah. It was a Whole Foods Market chicken sausage, the mushroom and parmesan one. So it's the fully cooked in the package sausage. I vastly prefer pork sausage, raw pork sausage that you cook yourself the whole way through. So you get a nice crispy
casing.
And
links are like cut up into pieces.
Links,
or the chunks.
I don't like the chunks as much because the chunks can dry out without the casing. And so you wind up with something that's more like eraser like in texture. With the exception of if you're putting it inside of a sauce, like if you're making, your like broccoli robin sausage, or quiete or whatever, like, you got that going on.
It's pronounced Quixote.
It's pronounced windmill. But the...
at the old mill, remember? That's where they were having their party at the end.
Yeah, they had the party at the old mill where there was a chainsaw that had gasoline in it ready to go.
Just so many things. All of the graffiti in the town is neon fluorescent.
I really thought that it was going to be significant that they were having this take place at the old mill, but it wasn't. Significant.
Like he was going to have a stash of weapons around the place to go like pull out, or it was going to be related to maybe explaining some of the circumstances that created this killer person over the past several decades.
Yeah, I mean literally anything. It's not connected to anything. I thought that he would like throw a switch and it would lock the doors. I thought that he would, do something because it seemed obvious that the motivation was to kill as many people as possible, but once they got there, it was really just kill the three, let's just say rapey, you know, football team guys. And as an audience, we don't miss them or want them to live. And then we have the other guy, who gets the like, I know what you did last summer, right through the eye. Yeah. And the papier-mâché wall. I guess that's the whole strategy, is like she knew exactly where the papier-mâché wall would be because she lived there. In terms of the setting making any sort of significant statement about the characters in the film or the stakes of the film, no, it doesn't. It's just a place.
Yeah. I suppose.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I think it's also a strange move that the movie makes where they kill a lot of people that you want to see die. and it's not as interesting to me when that happens as when it's somebody who doesn't deserve to die, because then the stakes are higher because I want them to live.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the body count in general, this movie is not outlandishly high. I mean, like the opening scene is an outlier because it has to be, because you have to kill all of the some deserving, some undeserving teens there to set up the fact that this is a horrible murderer. But the rest of it, what do we got? Alan Ruck, we got Ryler, we got three rapey football boys, and then I Know What You Did Last Summer football boy, and then
that's it. So
six people,
yeah, plus the four at the beginning. So there's 10 deaths in this film. Mm-hmm. Not that I would shrug if 10 people died right now in front of me, but in the course of events for a slasher film, it is not astronomical in terms of body count. And also the fact that most of these people are not people we want to see live is also a contributing factor.
I guess the reduced body count can be somewhat attributed to the fact that Winnie's and Millie's bodies far less scary and mm-hmm. powerful.
Yeah, and that is a plot point, basically, for this. And I was curious, because Millie steals the dagger at one point. I was curious if it was going to be a situation where she was going to stab someone else so that she could take someone else's body, or at least
do a bunch of body jumping at the party so you don't know who the bad guy actually is.
Right. Or something like that. Although you only body swap if you don't kill the person.
Right. And so you would just have to casually, you know, mildly wound a lot of people.
Yeah. And also it would only take effect at midnight, basically, when they went to sleep.
Yeah. I feel like they could have glossed over that part and just, you know, done all of the jumps in rapid succession, and it wouldn't have made that much less sense.
Yeah. I don't know why the sleep part had to be involved at all, to be perfectly honest with you, other than
no, it didn't.
Wanting to have the shock of them waking up in a place that they didn't expect to be.
It has to be that, because yeah, there was no reason for that to be the case, because you know, you sense that there was some swapping happening as soon as the stab occurred, because you know, there was the blood on both of them or whatever, and I think that's what they wanted to do, but they really did want to have that reveal the next morning, waking up in the bed. But it was confusing and kind of took away from it a little bit.
Yeah. Also, they make a point at the beginning of the film to talk about the murderer who murdered a bunch of people, apparently, I guess, in the 90s, according to this, and then hasn't been seen or heard from since. So it's just an urban legend. And then the murderer.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of urban legend brought up between the 90s and now, but unverifiably. So, you know, it's either BS or maybe it's happening and it's just kind of somewhere else. But it seems like it hasn't happened since the 90s.
Right. And the movie doesn't attempt to explain why there's a sudden uptick in murders now. So I don't know.
They said his name three times at the teenager sex party.
Yeah. They looked in the mirror, with the bathroom door closed, and they said, mm-hmm. Blissfield Butcher three times fast. And then they, you know, failed at doing that 10 times.
More difficult than you would imagine.
Very difficult. But, I don't know why structurally it mattered that this was a killer from the past, because it seemed to have nothing to do with the present. And so why just, it could have just been somebody who snapped recently.
Yeah. I mean, it just adds to the, you know, the weird lived-in feeling of the call it a bedroom or whatever at the old mill when he wakes up surrounded by his
Yeah.
creepy paraphernalia and gross things.
It just felt lazy when that murder den in the old mill. And the murder den doesn't come back up ever. They don't go there for clues or hints or anything, which is strange. But that's just left completely untouched for the duration of the film.
I mean, maybe it was behind a secret door or something.
Yeah, the papier mâché wall.
Although the drug-seeking old man with the long hair seemed to find it pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's other people living inside this abandoned compound, but just why? I don't know. I mean, it's not that I need an explanation because it needs to make sense. I need to feel like the movie it was going somewhere with some of this stuff. It just sort of brings things up and then doesn't do anything with them. And it's like, okay, well, could you do something with it? It would be more interesting if you'd done something with it. Like, you could tie it into some other part of this. Because, like I was saying with the knife, where it's this mystical, enchanted object that can perform this thing, he doesn't seek it out on purpose. He just happens to accidentally, coincidentally grab this thing, and do this thing in such a way that he accidentally swaps bodies. There's nothing intentional to it. There's nothing intentional to him coming back and murdering people now. There's nothing intentional to him seeking out this thing. There's nothing intentional to the murders he's committing right now, other than the people who annoy him slightly as Millie. And it doesn't go anywhere in terms of like a grand plan of what will be done at the end of the film. The butcher has no actual like goals other than just like kill people.
I'm
And
sure it's a killer, like that's in a slasher movie. You don't need a whole lot more than that. But I wonder where the line is in terms of stuff that was just like they gave up on, or stuff that they avoided intentionally to sort of subvert your expectations that they were going to subvert your expectations. Like the reveal that we were waiting to find out that, shooting Vince Vaughn and they hadn't actually swapped back. Yeah. Do you think there are other instances in here where they made the conscious decision to not put an additional horror hat on the hat because they thought we would see it coming, and they kept it more straight laced and more just along for the fun ride of the body swap, and then at the end there you just want some sort of a satisfying ending where you can actually attack the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I
I
don't
mean, I'm sure some of it was coincidental and some of it was probably intentional, but I couldn't tell you where the line is, because it all just seems like oversight until you really kind of dig into it. But one of the things that I was almost slightly disappointed in is once they do the body swap back and you realize that it did work, it seemed like an opportunity for them to contend with the fact that now Vince Vaughn is back in his giant, powerful body and they have to fight him. But the cops were just there and it's like, nope, shoot him.
Yeah, they shortcut that, I think, to get us to the end scene where Vince Vaughn is powerful and is beating up these three women. How he's doing that after multiple gunshot wounds is unclear. I don't understand that part of
It's
it.
the restorative power of the ancient Aztec sacrifice knife.
Yeah, just pump full of adrenaline. They wanted to have that end scene, so they needed to get to the end scene as fast as possible.
And I know Millie is not, much of a dresser in her native state, but she was at least grossed out enough by Vince Vaughn's unclean body to go shower at the high school, but then she puts his dirty clothes right back on. It's like, gross, man.
Yeah, I that doesn't really feel like it's helping.
At least put the polo on when you put your Aaron Rodgers mask on.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't understand how this movie thought that Vince Vaughn, who is like Frankenstein sized, walking around with a Aaron Rodgers mask on, was some sort of clever disguise. Because if I saw someone walking around with that mask on, I would just immediately assume that there is something incredibly wrong happening. But everyone in this town seems to recognize the butcher, which is also strange because they put out like a police sketch. nobody recognizes anybody from a police sketch.
It was a pretty good police sketch. It's a very small town, so it's understandable.
Yeah, I guess. How does he live most of the time where people wouldn't have seen or interacted with him prior to this?
He lives in the shadows of the old mill. Lurks around at nighttime, and apparently, you know, he doesn't eat very much because he was very famished and was eating that bacon and French toast and scrambled eggs like an animal. But to your point about
like tossed salad and scrambled eggs,
exactly.
They're killing this again.
This is in the Frasier universe, absolutely.
What if Kelsey Grammer had been in the Vince Vaughn part?
he would be intimidating as well. Mm-hmm. Less funny as a high school girl, though, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
But the Aaron Rodgers mask was
what if Niles was the shop teacher?
Or Mad Dog? He could do that.
Yeah.
It's also
Ross was the mom.
Recent news has illustrated that a strange man was walking around in public with a creepy mask on. And there is, in fact, certainly something wrong with him.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there something wrong with us all?
I mean, not in that same way. You saw that mask, right?
I know. Yeah. It was a very scary mask.
It's frightening. It's very frightening.
Yeah. I if you didn't tell me that was supposed to be an NFL player, I would just tell you that looked like a bad, like, President Reagan mask. It doesn't affect any sort of specific person to my recollection, but yeah, it's strange.
Aaron Rodgers, famous quarterback for the Green Bay Packers.
Sure. And then, of course, Josh has that line where he says, "I'm gay, and even I know that." So good for Josh.
Oh, I must have missed that line.
Mm-hmm. It was quick because it's such a quick wit. But anyway, the movie, it happened.
It improved as it went, I think. And it was entertaining to a point. There's always just something about those brutal cold opens to a horror movie, which I do not enjoy at all. But that's a me thing, not the movie.
I like Scream, the first one, the original one, for its cold open, because I feel like it successfully subverts expectations for the franchise and the genre of what's going on, because specifically it wasn't a franchise at the time, but you can't do that every time you do a movie, because then you're not subverting anything. You have to figure out what it is that you're trying to do that would be unique and different about your project.
And I
don't think that they did that.
And that cold open is one that is seared into my memory, because I didn't watch Scream when it originally came out. Everyone that I knew in my entire life was obsessed with the Scream movies, to the point that they were like writing their own versions of Scream movies, and like they wanted to like film them with their friends or whatever. Like, I had no interest whatsoever. I don't know that they ever did it. They wrote some. I can't remember what the hell they were called, but I had zero interest in any of that. But a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago at most, it was on, and I watched the opening, the Drew Barrymore stuff with, and then that's the one that ends with like the parents on the phone or whatever. It was so horrifyingly brutal to me that I was like, I can't watch this movie, and I no longer want to watch this movie.
It's not like I considered an everyday treat or something.
It did exactly what it was trying to do, and it disgusted me to the point that I did not want to watch the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But I think that's also one of the things about, because I saw that, I believe, in theaters, is that, and also I think, I know what you did last summer.
One I did see. I don't know why.
Yeah, that one is less good than Scream. But the thing with Scream is that if you're in a theater and you just are committed to watching this experience, it's a little different, and you feel a little less safe than if you're at home. I feel like it set a new bar for the slasher films that everyone after that first film has attempted to imitate. Like, I don't know if you watch the Scary Movie franchise of comedy films.
Some of them.
Yeah, they're not scary. but they're barely funny in some cases. More in a couple of cases than others. But this movie is much more like trying to be Scream than it is trying to be Scary Movie. Which is curious because this is obviously trying to be more of a comedy than Scream was. But I don't know. The death and the scope of what's happening, it doesn't feel as sophisticated, but it also doesn't have as many throwaway jokes to the side as many other comedy things would have. But you know, I agree with you that it got better as it went on. The first 30 minutes of this movie are awful. And I wouldn't wish them on anyone. But the movie is fortunately only in an hour and 40 minutes.
42.
Yeah, so you're pretty safe after that point. You get an hour's worth of stuff that's tolerable. And you just walk away with a little bit of dissatisfaction from what they could have, should have, would have done. But
I don't know that I really wish they would have done anything in particular. Like, we're talking about some wasted opportunities with linking some things back together, but I can't point at any single one of those and go like, that really would have made a huge difference.
I don't think there's anything they could have done that would have drawn me into this in a way where I would have appreciated this as much, because I think that I'm not the target audience for this, but
yeah,
I feel like that there are missed opportunities to make this stronger for the people for whom this is the target audience.
I don't know. I think this movie is for people who want to see Vince Vaughn pretend to be a high school girl.
You may be right. Although I will say, as I had complimented Catherine Newton before, it turns out I've seen her in many movies, and I just did not realize that I've seen her so many times.
Which ones?
She was in Lady Bird as Darlene Bell. She was in Blockers. She was one of the lead kids in Blockers, which is, I think, an actually funny movie.
Pokemon movie.
She's going to
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, she was in Detective Pikachu, which we watched not that long ago. And there's also Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which is going to come out in 2023, which is filming now, which is just sort of crazy to think about the schedules on these things. But anyway.
Is that a TV show or a movie?
Nah, it's going to be a movie.
And what else did I just see on her credits here? Three Billboards Outside Whatever. I saw that movie.
I didn't see that one. But she has been a lot of stuff. And I think that she's a talented actress. And I would like to see her more things. And we should do Blockers sometimes, because that's actually funny. But I don't know.
Is it really?
I think Blockers is funny.
She was the main girl in Detective Pikachu. How did I not remember that?
I know. Well, see, I think that she affects such an amazing performance in all of her roles that you just completely forget who she is every time.
Sure. It's not that she's just kind of generic high school blonde girl.
I guess. I mean, she's also played a generic high school blonde girl for the last 8 years, it seems. She's been in high school since 2011.
Is she one of the secretly 30 people?
She's 24, so she's not she was actually, you know, she's been playing a teenager most of the time. She was a teenager. She's not like what's her face from 90210, Gabriella,
Mr. Evan Hansen.
Yeah. Oh, man. Ben Platt. Jeez. What if Platt had been the serial murderer in this movie? Right, so
I would have believed that. What is this movie that she's in with Clark Bacco, who is in Letterkenny?
I don't know.
Wayward Sisters?
Never heard of that.
Me neither.
Is that a movie?
Apparently.
Okay. It's not on her film thing.
Well, whatever.
Okay. Anyway, we should do Blockers sometimes, because it's just better than this.
It's got John Cena being one of the more John Cena-y roles.
Yeah, and Leslie Mann, who I always appreciate. You don't like Leslie Mann?
I like Leslie Mann. Leslie Mann has her uses.
It's very abrupt. Directed by Kay Cannon. You like Kay Cannon as a director? of comedy.
I was speaking of the director, Christopher Landon. I didn't look at him. What else has he done?
Oh, just a bunch of horror crap.
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Happy Death Day, the sequel, which that's another one, Happy Death Day, that I did not see, but seemed like another one kind of like this, that's a comedic subversion of horror, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's, isn't that the one that's supposed to be like Groundhog Day, but it's like with murdering? Yeah. So it seems like they have a shtick, Christopher Landon and Michael Kennedy anyway.
It's the Ryan Johnson of horror movies.
That's too high of a compliment. I would, I don't know. I would say he's the Colin Trevorrow of horror movies.
It's not. He wrote Disturbia. I remember Disturbia back when, what's his name?
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf was still kind of normal.
Remember when Carrie Ann Moss played the mom in that? It was just like, oh, Carrie Ann. That's so much better than this.
But the creepy neighbor killer guy was extremely believable, whatever that guy's name is. I can never remember his name.
Yeah, yeah.
David Morse.
Sure.
Yeah, he's got that face you recognize, but not a name.
But anyway, I think that was fine, I guess. It wasn't, again, not scary. Also, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to watch any of these Paranormal Activity movies. So no, who knows? No, maybe
that is not my jam at all. Maybe not because I'm scared of them, but they seem extremely stupid.
Yeah, maybe they are scary to someone, but not to me. But it seems like he just has a thing where he likes to do goofy stuff that's also vaguely related to slasher horror things. So whatever.
I'm glad he is happy doing the things that he is doing.
I'm indifferent to him being happy. So good for him, I guess, but
that's,
I don't care.
That's just your general demeanor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also I have to say, the score was barely noticeable, and I'm kind of disappointed because it was Bear McCreary, so I was expecting more oomph, but really didn't get anything out of it.
I don't even know who that person is.
He did, I think he's probably mostly famous for the Battlestar Galactica reboot TV series.
Oh, sure, my favorite.
But he's done, you love it, but he's done a lot of other things in terms of the scores for stuff, generally sci-fi horror things. So maybe that's why you haven't seen it, because you also hate science fiction in addition to horror. Whereas I love science fiction. I just don't like horror that much.
I don't hate science fiction. I hate fantasy.
Okay.
And I'm not doing the bit this time. I'm just saying.
Okay. I gotta ask. What are your favorite science fiction movies?
Plead the fifth until I can look at my Letterboxd account.
Okay. So it doesn't really, I'd have to, don't really buy your
Blues
explanation
Brothers
there.
Because the car flying was pure science fiction.
Oh, overruled. I hold you in contempt.
Okay.
All right. So on that note, I think we've discussed everything we can discuss about Freaky, parentheses, Friday the 13th, close parentheses.
Yes.
And it's going to be all we've got for D-Ween, defocused ween.
Holofocused ween.
Yeah. Holofocused ween.
Octobist. No. Defober.